Professor, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hello, Church Planner. This is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
And you're listening to Love Lines.
You're listening to the smooth sounds.
Did you ever have Love Lines podcast down in Southern California?
Love Line, yeah. Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew.
I wasn't sure because I knew it was syndicated, but you know, I didn't know where it was syndicated.
They were doing it from K-Rock. They were right here. They were doing it in K-Rock studios.
Really?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're doing it local here. Because, you know, obviously they're both living in L.A. So, yeah, that show was really interesting. You know, Dr. Drew Pinsky, who went on to do Celebrity Rehab and a bunch of other stuff, it was interesting because it was not from a Christian perspective. But back then, gosh, we're talking like our 80s, right?
Oh, and 90s.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to listen to the radio in the 80s, so that would have been the 90s.
You definitely would not have been allowed to listen to that because that show,
100%.
What was interesting about that, people would call in, for those of you that don't know, and they would deal with their problems.
For you kids, this is pre-internet when you couldn't go Google stuff.
Yeah.
Listen to the radio.
So you'd call, and there's Adam Carolla, who a lot of people know now. He did The Man Show and a bunch of other stuff, but he was just like the average guy. It was kind of like Pete and I, similar dynamics where one guy was like, okay, this is my field. And the other guy's like, I'm just here for fun and I'm eye candy, right? That's you, Pete. And so,
eye candy.
You know, since you've been hitting the gym and all, but the funny thing is that, now that I'm your fat friend, but the thing is that,
you have no idea what I really wanted to say there, and you're going to have to remind me when we're off the podcast. I'm going to make a note because it is a classic line that I can only say to you, and I have to say it. It's nothing
classic.
Bad.
All right. Gotcha.
It's nothing bad, but
I
can't say it on the air because
you would not like me saying it.
Yeah.
Is it a short joke?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, so, you know those I would say on the podcast. What are you
kidding? Yeah, I was going to say, those don't trigger me anymore. I remember we went through a phase where we were getting under each other's skin and we knew the buttons to push and we were pushing them a lot. That was funny. That was a good era. But now I'm looking back thinking, why did that even bother me? That wouldn't bother me today. So anyways.
Yes, it would. I don't buy that for a second.
You don't?
Not for a second.
You know, I'm noticing this trend. I see this trend right now. It's people close to me know me way better than I know myself, because when I say things, nobody believes me no matter what I say. Like just handed in the book, Discipology Edits. If you're wondering, well, I thought you handed that in already. See, you don't believe me, audience. But the way it is actually that, you gotta edit it when they give it back to you. But, I keep telling people, oh, my life will be back to normal. And they're like, no, it won't. Like nobody believes me when I make any assertions anymore, because they're like, yeah, no, we know you. You
should have known
whatever
that.
You want.
You were late for today's podcast. You're back to normal.
When he says late, he means 8:01. That's what he means.
I mean, you have to send me the link for Zoom, and you usually send it a few minutes before, and I'm like, literally,
I couldn't get in
at 10 o'clock. I'm like, okay. He's skipping today. Oh, forgot him at Comic-Con. I can't do it. Whatever your excuse is.
Yeah. Well, so back to Loveline, though.
Yes,
you know, I'm going to call in. Hey, I got this podcasting co-host. I'll stop there because I know I'm triggering you now. But anyways, you would call in, and what was amazing, it wasn't about, like, it wasn't from a Christian perspective. And I don't know if Dr. Drew is a Christian or Adam Carolla is a Christian, But what I do know,
I don't know if Adam Carolla is a Christian either. Like,
well, today though, I people change, right? Like,
he does. And he's, what's funny is him and Jimmy Kimmel are like best friends, and Jimmy Kimmel is massively liberal, and Adam Carolla is massively conservative. And I'm
Jimmy
like,
Jimmy Kimmel was on that show. In fact, when he kind of grandstands and, what is it they call it? The signaling, virtue signaling, whenever he does that, they'll just pull out clips and say, this guy's a dirtbag. Like, look what he used to do on the Man Show.
Yeah.
And so, but anyways, going back to that, you know, I was in the psych hospital working as an RN in the 90s, and so much of psychiatry was aligned with Christianity. You know, there's definitely been a political shift within the realm of psychiatry, where now it's like, even if they did find studies to say one thing, it's very rare that you'll hear someone say, well, you know, in the case of a lot of mental illness, you know, we'll find transgenderism, or you can't say that now, but that was the data. And, you just, there's so many different, like, there were certain.
Not even just that, but like, and so again, to your point, it's not that he was handling things from a Christian perspective. It's that he was like handling things from a science perspective.
Yeah.
Well, that happens to be in line with Christianity.
Well, it's just the way we're made. And I think that's
what he would talk about. Like, 'cause a lot of stuff they would bring up would be sexual in nature.
Right.
He'd be like, look, this is why that doesn't work. It was not good for you physically. And like, he would go into the science behind it, which I don't even know if he could do that today.
If he did that today, Jordan Peterson.
It would probably be like, you know, they'd probably cancel him.
Oh, Jordan Peterson, right? Like, Jordan Peterson comes on the scene, and I know there's a lot of talk right now about whether or not he's a Christian. You know, people going on there, see, like they're trying to like get his words. It always reminds me of the Pharisees. I can give my take on him in a minute, but you know, it's funny because Jordan Peterson comes on the scene with sociology and psychology. And of course, he's a Jungian psychologist, which Jung was a student of Freud, and he had this whole thing called memes, which are like recurring realities throughout history. They call them memes. It's not like how we have social media memes, but like a meme is like a recurring theme, like Cain and Abel, right? Would be the embodiment of a meme, this struggle, you know, between you and other people and what have you, or even two one advantage person, disadvantaged person. Like, these themes run, and they just call them memes because they're deeper than a theme. It's like this recurring, it's the way of things. It's how things are wired, and you will never get away from it. That's kind of the definition of a meme. And he wrote his first book called Maps of Meaning, which is what a meme really is. It'll show you how life works. So when he came up with his book, 12 Rules for Life, it was how to have a pretty decent life based on these 12 memes. It was based in data. But you go and read that, and you're like, okay, so much of that is like Christianity. And he has been on a journey to the faith because these memes are leading him back to Christian truth. You want to hear a guy that, you know, he doesn't necessarily know about the historicity of Cain and Abel or these stories, but he was debating who's the guy, the super big internet atheist, and he writes all those books. What's his name? God Doesn't Believe in Atheists. You know who I'm talking about?
No, there's so many atheists who write books on the internet.
He's the guy. He wrote about chaos theory and science. I can't remember his name. He's not a philosophical atheist. He's like a evolutionist. It's on the tip of my brain.
What ethnicity is he?
He's English.
Then no, I have no idea. It's not Richard Dawkins, is it?
Yeah, Richard Dawkins. Thank you. Ah, the brain. I did not sleep the night before last because I was on the deadline and I needed every single minute. But anyways, you know, Jordan Peterson's on with him, and he's like, Dawkins presses him and says, yeah, but you want me to take you serious, and I need to know. Do you believe that Cain and Abel were real people? Dr. Peterson, come on. You can't leave this hanging. And Peterson wouldn't answer it. And finally he said, yes, I suppose I do. But the reason your question is hard for me is with my background, it's not that they were just real. It's that they're hyper real.
Right.
You know, like they're, it's so real.
He was explaining this to Joe Rogan. Because Joe Rogan was asking about the Bible or something like that. And he goes, and see, this is where Christians would have a problem with this. But right. I understand it from his scientific mind where he's coming from.
Yeah.
He goes, he didn't basically, I'm not, don't quote me on this, but he's like, it doesn't matter if it's real. He goes, people have based society on this book. Like, where we're at today is because people believe in it. And what it says. And so like Christians would have a problem. Oh, well, it is the truth. Yes, it is. But I understand where he's coming from. So that's what he's talking about. The hyper real is like, well, it kind of doesn't, like in his mind, it doesn't matter if it's true or not.
Right.
In his mind, it's like,
it's what story is. Yeah.
And how that has impacted generation after generation since that story.
Well, and even more than that, like a Jungian actually believes this is how we are. Like, whether it was true in the past that this happened, it's descriptive of what is. And not just because we had the book. Like actually, like for him, he would have said, like, we evolved as a species and then a society. And that this is, for whatever reason, this is why we are, right? Like, we are just these people. And I think in his earlier days, he would have believed that the ancient texts like that were just simply describing life as it is.
You're talking about Jordan Peterson?
Yeah. And so, but you know, it's interesting because going back to his Christianity, if I were to look at his description, and this is where the, you know, it's an annoying trend where I make a show on YouTube of someone else's interview. I can't get the guest, but I'm going to like chime in like I'm the expert on these other guys' interview. I can't stand that. To me, it's borrowed brilliance. It's like, go interview your own people and mine your own gold. Stop kind of parasiting and leeching off of other people's shows. That's just... okay. All right, Grandpa Peyton, like, you know, but here's the thing is what I'm hearing is all these Christians coming on and they're like, see, he said this, he's not a Christian. Well, I would say, hold on a second. Every single person that I have personally watched coming to Jesus in a ministry context, particularly a frontline one, where you're not having someone raised in a Christian home, someone's outside, they come from a different angle, they have a different paradigm, they don't talk like you, they don't put it in the Christian phrases you do. And if you're looking for, is this, and you're looking for this definitive statement, you're not going to get it for a while with someone who's actually probably saved unless you program them to say this thing. You have to because you're a Christian. For someone like Peterson, who's probably come to Christ gradually over time, and I do think he's, if not there already, which is always a mystery, when does someone, he's right at the brink. Like, we had this woman named Carol, who's supernaturally healed in Britain, and she came to faith. She accepted Jesus, but then her journey was, I don't know who you are, he, she, it, but I need you to let me know who you are. Well, at that very moment when she prayed that, our invitation to our church came through. So it freaked her out. She came the first Sunday. You know, I was preaching on John, the man born blind who healed you. I don't know, but it must have been God. The guy must have been from God. It's Jesus. So she's freaking out in the service because she's just been healed and wants to know who healed me, because these two Christians prayed, but she wasn't sure. Well, I'll tell you, for the next like year and a half of her salvation, she did get saved right away. she still believed in universalism. We'd be in Bible studies and she'd be like, you know, I just believe that everybody is going to come to Jesus. And because we were we preach, yes, but she just thought I was wrong. Because I wasn't universalist, and I will always be a Jesus is the only way kind of guy, because I do love the Bible. But the reality is that people are going to talk like this for a while. So I think these guys on YouTube, if Jordan Peterson sees that, you know, it's kind of like, really? Like, you're not going to encourage us, brother? It was like when Kat Dinkley came to faith. So Dinkley? Kat D, the tattoo.
Oh, yeah, tattoo, yeah.
When she came, Von D, right? Yeah. Dinkley, I don't know where I got that from. But anyways, she was just savaged by people online. And she had this little teeny church and was super grounded in it and knew her pastor personally. And he walked her through it. She's like, you know, I just talked to my pastor about it, and he helped me understand the con. Like, he just told her, hey, don't even pay attention to those guys, you know, yada, 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 and talked her through it. And she was fine. But most people don't have that when they go through it. And so I think these guys just coming up like the Pharisee, like, cross this T and dot this I. And it's not that I'm...
Well, Paul did say, you know, you got to repent. Believe in Jesus. You got to believe in a literal 6-day creation. You got to believe. I mean, this is all from Paul. It only happened 6,000 years ago. That's part of what it takes to be considered a Christ follower. According to Paul.
Like, for example, I just saw the heading of one today. I haven't even watched it. Said, I'm not ready. And this guy's like, see, this is what I was telling you. And I will tell you one thing about Jordan Peterson. Is if anyone understands, and I've heard him repeatedly talking about Jesus, and it's almost like he's fearfully afraid to say that, yes, I am 100%. And he was pressed on that by one guy where he's like, well, why would you be afraid? Jesus takes away all fear. And it's like, are you forgetting a huge, like Paul said, knowing the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. Right before that, he said, for we will all stand before him to receive and things done in the body, whether good or bad. He's talking about rewards there and punishments. Now, Christians don't get punishments because Christ absorbed all that. But we do get rewards, and that is a fearful thing. I mean, the New Testament does not say, ha, ha, silly monkey, there's no fear of God anymore. No, fear of God is like the basis of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is your strength. The fear, like... There is so much about the fear of God in the Bible, but in context to our own judgment, no. But, when I watch Jordan hesitating, I see it's like where he says, where Jesus says, count the cost. And I see him, it's like he's on a journey and he's at that place. It's not that he's saying, no, I don't believe in Jesus, or he just, you can hear this reverence and awe in him. If this is really true, Then this is not like, it's not a slip up your hand. And this is the damage I think that evangelicals do sometimes to the whole question of salvation. American evangelicalism in particular is we want it to be an assembly line, right? We want it to be like you come through and you raise your hand and you say this little ditty and you're saved. Welcome to the kingdom of God, you know? And it's not always like that. C.S. Lewis, by the way, would not have passed the test as an evangelical. There's a checklist, and it was Lloyd Jones who brought this out years ago. And Lloyd Jones loved C.S. Lewis, but he said, you know, he's not an evangelical. He was Church of England, and you can be an evangelical Church of England. C.S. Lewis was not an evangelical. He had things that people would find questionable about his faith. Was he a Christian? 100%. Did he believe Jesus was the only way? He did. But there are just certain things where I think evangelicals need to throttle off and stop being, you know, stop getting in the way of what the Holy Spirit's doing.
I remember watching this video clip. I can't remember the dude's name. It's a big name brand pastor. You would recognize him. David something or other. God, man, what is his name? We even had him on Church Planter Magazine on the cover one time. And I remember watching him speaking from the pulpit one time, and he's like, nowhere in the Bible does it say you say a magic prayer and you're right. in. He goes, how many people right now think they're saved because they said David a magic Platt? Prayer? Yeah. Oh, say that again.
David Platt.
David Platt. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, how many people are going to end up at the end and like, God's going to be like, I never knew you.
Yeah.
Cause they think they said a magic prayer and all of a sudden. That's it. And that's kind of what we've turned, you know, following Christ into. Oh, just say this magic prayer.
Well, okay. So I'm a free Methodist, right? And it's interesting to me because my whole journey of faith, I was Reformed for like, gosh, from the time I was like 17 to the time I was probably about 35. So
see, I hear these terms all the time. I've been doing this podcast with you for 12 years. I grew up as a pastor's kid. I still have no idea what Reformed and Arminian or whatever. I don't know what those things mean.
Well,
and
it's funny.
You can explain it to me today and I won't remember it 5 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to explain it anyway. So historically, you go back to the Catholic Church, right? Back then, there was only Catholic and Greek Orthodox. The Reformation really started in Germany and Switzerland with Luther, Zwingli. And then in the UK, the English Reformation came about under King Henry VIII. And of course, there's Thomas Cranmer, who is the guy who kind of was really the because people ask, like, was it really so that, you know, Henry VIII, well, it was an excuse for Cranmer to, you know, he had been reading stuff from the Reformation, and it was like a welcome opportunity for him. So you can oversimplify it, but Cranmer was really the guy. He was rad. He's one of my heroes. But he transitioned everything over from Catholic to Protestant, and that's where the Anglicans are at. They were the Anglican Church. But then what happened was, and I was just saying, you know, how I was Reformed, you know, with Calvin in Switzerland, he ended up kind of going a step further, and Calvinism goes further than Lutheranism. Luther at the Reformation was just, it's only Christ. It's none of your works. There's law and there's faith. And if you in any way put your trust in the law, you are damned. That's what Paul's saying in Galatians. You only trust in Christ. That's it. Christ is the answer to the law. Perfect. Fine. With you all the way. In fact, I would say that my soteriology nowadays is very Lutheran with a catch. Because when I say I was Reformed, I was Calvinistic, but it's kind of like when you hear pork, the other white meat. I would say Lutheranism, the other Reformed. Because when people say Reform, you think Calvinistic, you know, which the theology, the heart of it is 5 points of Calvinism. Did you choose God or did God choose you? And they say, no, God chose us all the way because we would never choose God. Well, Lutherans are not Calvinists, but they are highly Reformed. So for me, I was at a crossroads looking at when I no longer believe Calvinism. And I came to that basically by everywhere where you talk about God choosing us. And by the way, let me just say, I in no way had a philosophical problem with God choosing. He could choose you, Pete. He could choose me. Shall not the judge of the earth do right? He could do whatever he wants. And he's just, right? Because everything's of grace. Nobody deserves anything. So that's a Calvinist argument. I 100% still hold to that. So I came out of it not because I no longer thought it was right. I always was like, God, and to this day, my question was always, is that what the scripture is saying? And I was convinced it was for, gosh, like 20 years of my life. And then one day I'm reading in Romans and it just hits me. Paul's talking about Jews and Gentiles here with this predestination stuff. It's not even predestination. It's election. Before the foundation of the world, God elected the Gentiles. And I started realizing he's talking about people groups. This is not individual election. This is people groups. And then I went, was he talking Jew, Gentile, and Galatians, Ephesians, Romans? Yes. Oh my gosh. And so it's what's known as corporate election. And there's been a lot of good work on this. There's a guy that goes around debating Calvinists, kind of pointing this out. Hey, so I always tell people I exposited my way into Calvinism and back out the other side. But am I what you would call an Arminian? No. Do I believe that God 100% gives us what's called prevenient grace? Like, do I think I could just believe? No. But the Spirit has to enlighten you. Jesus said that. I still believe that, but I no longer swallow the whole system of Calvinism. I appreciate what I got from it, this sense of this majesty and awe of God's sovereignty. And in my theology, God is still sovereign. But you don't have to give that up to be Lutheran in your theology. But I eventually went over to Free Methodism, which this is interesting. What a lot of people don't realize is that if you analyze Wesley's soteriology, which is theology of salvation, he's Lutheran. All he did was, in fact, he came to faith reading Luther's introduction to the commentary on Romans. That's how he came to faith. And so you look at that and you go, huh. So for me, the reason, and this is what I was coming to, the reason that I went Free Methodist was I felt like I got the essentials of Lutheranism in it, but I also got this sense of what James is talking about, which is the counterbalance to that. Yes, you were only saved by faith through the blood of Jesus, right? That's it. No argument. No one's ever going to add even like, you know, a hair onto the scales of balance there on the other side. Nothing. I contribute nothing but sin to this relationship, right? That's all I bring. God brought the gospel. He brought the sacrifice. He brought everything. He even gave me the prevenient grace to believe.
That's one of the things that I mean, obviously there's a lot of things I take issue with when it comes to Mormonism, but one of the things that to me is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard is their thoughts on what you just talked about.
Yeah.
You know, because it says, I think it's Doctrines and Covenants or something like that. You know, you did everything you could do. And then that last little bit you couldn't do, that's where God came in and Jesus' blood took over the rest of it. I'm like,
right.
You think I brought anything to this? Like, to me, it's like, okay, if God's on one side of the Grand Canyon and I'm on the other, and I've been to the Grand Canyon, it looks so far away. It looks like a painting on the other side. Like, it just, that's how, it's just nuts, right? And it would be like me trying to jump the widest part of the Grand Canyon and thinking, and if I made it, like, I had any part of it, right? Like, to me, that's
such a great, I pictured you on a motorcycle going over the edge.
Oh, it doesn't even matter.
Kicking right? Your legs out from the side, you know?
But it's just like, that's the ridiculousness of the idea that I contributed anything to reaching God. Like,
yeah. I mean, it is no ridiculous. Way. I mean, like, even to the point where if you put me and Andrea in the Garden of Eden today, under those even today, I'm going to make the wrong choice at some point in eternity. Like, you know, it's not going to go well, right? And I know that because I know my daily life here.
Well, see, but that's why I honestly, I think about how it's going to be when we're in heaven. And I'm like, how am I not going to screw it up? You know, like,
it's different. It's different because what it's happens. Different,
but at the same time, I'm like, I can't imagine that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's mind-boggling. Like, I can't
fathom. I get it. I get it. But this is where exactly what you said is why I made, when I was looking, Lutheran, Anglican, Free, you know, Free Methodist or Wesleyan was the other one. Because the Wesleyans right now are going nuts on multiplication and disciple. Like, I asked Exponential, who are the guys that are killing it right now out there? And so I was there, but Wesley has been a hero of mine for years, but this is what Wesley brought in. In my next book, Discipology, cha-ching, I get to do that now with that title. In that book, we talk about the different types of gospels. Like, there is an evangelical gospel, right? There was a Victorian gospel. There is the Methodist gospel. And you can look through church history and see what was emphasized. What I would say is the gospel is the gospel, but in different ages and times, people have held it up like a diamond, and the light from heaven is refracted off of it and brought out a different aspect. So there's the gospel of freedom, which I think is very pertinent today. You know, God can set you free from all this addiction. Is that the whole gospel? No. How about gospel of forgiveness and justification? That was Luther's gospel. Is it the whole gospel? No. There's more, but wait, there's more, right? The gospel of belonging, you know, like you're brought near to God, like, you know, the gospel of the new birth, which was Whitfield, be born again, right? That's one verse, but that's that. And in the 70s, that had a resurgence to be born again. You don't say that anymore because that's got a bad connotation. But for the evangelicals, it's, hey, you're going to go to hell. Jesus made a way to heaven. You can't do it yourself. Boom. Is that the gospel? Yes. Is it the entire gospel? No. The gospel is much fuller than what people, so there's different aspects of it. And the reason I bring it up in Discipology is I'm like, you have to know when to share which aspect of the gospel, because it's all in there. And so I've got like maybe 10 different things. And I just say, these are the curse took these things away from Adam and Eve. The gospel restores them. And here's what it looks like in the New Testament when it talks about it restoring that. So all that to say, the thing about Wesley that I love, and the thing about his theology that I love, is he's got that solid bedrock of Lutheran salvation. Just sola gratia, sola fide. But then he's like, but when the Spirit of God comes into your life, you live different. That's James. You know, we're saved by faith alone, but faith that saves is never alone. You will start to change. You will start to hate sin. You will start to transform from within. Like, this is what Wesley preached. Wesley preached the gospel of righteousness, not your own, but Christ's righteousness that gets inside of you and just starts working. So there's justified, you're that whole, there's an imparted righteousness. It's given to you, Pete. You now have the righteousness of Christ. The moment of your salvation, it's imparted. It's just given to you. It's yours. And Christ earned it for you. But then there's what's called the imputed righteousness. That's the righteousness that works inside of you, right? That makes you loving, that makes you more Christ-like. That's what the Holy Spirit is doing in you at all times. And so I love the fact that Wesley emphasizes that, because to me, it's like this, and then I'll shut up. It's like this. If you're only emphasizing Friday, what Jesus did on Friday, but don't ever talk about what he did on Sunday, right? You're only talking about the death of Jesus, but not the resurrection. Go back and read the book of Acts. They preach the death and resurrection. Why? Because the cross was grace, but the resurrection was power. And we have completely left the resurrection out of our theology of salvation. And it is a massive part of it, that you are now indwelt by the Spirit of God, which goes back to your question about heaven. The one difference between Adam and Eve and us is we are now partakers, we're told in Peter, of the divine nature. God in us, the Holy Spirit and our spirit fusing together. And when we're in heaven and raised in those perfect bodies, the Spirit, we are completely walking in the Spirit, a strength not our own, for the rest of eternity. We cannot, like, we are literally, as Calvin, when he came to Ephesians, and he said, he did this, before the foundation of the world. This is now, again, he's Calvinist, right? Calvinist, who would have thought? No, but what he said on that, it says that we should stand blameless before him in love. Calvin turned that in a beautiful turn of phrase, because I still appreciate Calvin, even though I'm not a Calvinist. But he said that word blameless literally means unblameable. You will be standing before him in eternity, unblameable. That's a mind blower right there.
It is. Should we get into this week's topic?
I think I did already, but
I know, right?
I was thinking this is going to be, you know, in England, they have something called a Lancashire hot pot, which is like up north working class. It's whatever from that week you didn't eat, you throw in the hot pot and you eat it. You know, that was where the term came from. It means something else now. But yeah, I felt like this is the grab bag, man. This is miscellaneous bucket of just stuff Peyton and Pate talked about, mainly Peyton's rant.
We called it this and that.
This and that. I like
this and that. At the end of the week, we have a little bit of this. We have a little bit of that. Whatever was
smack
left over.
Talk. No smack talk today, but this and that. I was going to talk about Comic-Con.
Oh,
that I was supposed to have gone to, Pete.
Wait, you canceled the podcast for Comic-Con.
I know.
And you didn't go?
I found out that morning that I couldn't go. So I didn't call you back because I was like, I got to work on the book. But so I didn't go to Comic-Con. Sorry.
Well, that'll make Luke feel better.
Yeah. What
like, is he going to come? He goes to work it. I don't know if he's working this one or if he's a visitor. I don't know.
Okay. So we have a support worker for Eden, right? She's an industry insider. She used to be an animator for Disney. So she goes because she is an industry insider, even though she's not currently working as that. She told me that you and I can get in because we are industry insiders. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you have a book, right? I said, yeah. She said, do you ever talk about Star Wars or any of that stuff in there? She knows me. I said, of course I do. She goes, well, there you go. You got a book. She goes, do you have a podcast? I said, yeah. And we do special episodes on Star Wars.
And it starts off with C-3PO.
I said that. And she goes, oh, you're in. She goes, all you got to do is apply. So if you want to go to, kids get in free. So under 12 though, is it 12? They're teenage, over, maybe it's under 18s. I don't know. But anyways, So I'm going to be going next year on an insider pass. If you want to go, we could broadcast from there, Pete.
I was told I could be an insider for what's called the SHOT Show. That's a big annual gun show in Las Vegas.
Yeah, but you need to come to Comic-Con with me. I knew I'd get you back to California at least one time.
Yeah, I still haven't been back. I don't know.
I respect that. I wouldn't come back if I were you either.
Yeah, no. So, by the way, I know this is the this and that episode, and now we're into the this and that section of the episode. I watched your movie that you told me to watch, The Free Burma Rangers.
Okay, what'd you think?
Ooh, that was a good movie, man.
It was good, wasn't it? It's not just good, it's stunning. You sit there at the end going, what did I just watch?
Yeah, no, I was watching that thing going, okay, so if God forbid I ever lost my family, I'm hooking up with that dude and I'm going.
Yeah.
Like,
so tell a little bit about it.
Dude, I can't remember his name. Dude was a missionary kid. And growing up, he's like, I kind of feel more like a soldier than a missionary. And literally, I'm thinking about my friend Matt Bissonette, who's the Navy SEAL. We went to college together. He's the Navy SEAL who got into all that trouble because he wrote the book No Easy Day without getting permission. Because he was on the mission that got Bin Laden, right? He was the second guy through the door. And he was a missionary kid. His parents were missionaries in Alaska, and he must have always felt, I feel more like a soldier, because he, like, from the moment I met him, he was a senior in high school. All he ever wanted to do was be a Navy SEAL. And the only reason why I bring that up is I'm like, you know, there seems to be something like a running theme here. Some of these missionary kids end up going to the military. So the dude goes to the Army and ends up becoming a Ranger. and, you know, loves his time as a ranger and all that. After he was in for 10 years, he was like, you know, I just felt like God calling me to something else. So obviously in the documentary, they don't, like, I don't know his own story, but it doesn't sound like he ever stepped away from the faith, which a lot of people, a lot of missionary kids, like pastor's kids do, right? It doesn't sound like that's what it was. He was just like, hey, now I feel God's calling me to something else. And one of his parents' friends was in Burma. And Burma, by the way, has had the longest running civil war in history. You know, at the time of the making of the movie, it was 60 years that this civil war has been going on. And they like approached his dad going, hey, you know, isn't your son in the military? You know, we could use some help over here. And so he goes not to fight. He goes to basically help the injured, help the civilians. And I mean, it's just brutal over there. Like, they're just killing everybody for any reason. Like, soon someone gets control and they get knocked out and the next dictator takes over. You know, it's a real bad scenario. And so, like, the way he tells it, he's like, okay, God, I don't know where we're going. He just shows up. And he's got all this medical equipment. He said a great line, man. I was like, man, I want to write that down. I didn't write it down, but it was something along the lines of, you know, sometimes you just got to go and pray and God will show you the rest of the way, like what you're supposed to do. And so there was this dude there, a Burmese guy who was a medical guy. I don't know if he was a doctor, you know, their equivalent of an EMT, whatever. And he just sees this white guy. And he's like, hey, I'm a doctor. Do you want to help me? And he's like, yes, actually I do. Let me go get my guys, right? So they got all these bags and they just start helping people. And that's what they're there. They're just helping the kids, helping a lot of them are women, helping the fathers that have been injured, they've been shot, they've been blown up, all this stuff. And then they decided to kind of take it to Iraq. And you know, with ISIS going on at the time when they were over there, I honestly have no idea what's going on with Iraq or ISIS or anything right now over there in the Middle East. But oh my gosh, dude, like when they went there, talk about just having to have full faith and trust in God as you're doing this, because it's like one of the most crazy scenes ever. You know, he meets some head Iraqi guy. And he goes, he feels like God tells him, get on your knees and pray right now. And as he tells the story, he goes, and I'm like, I'm going to look like one of those crazy whack job Christians, right? So he does that. He gets on his knees right there in front of these generals, all these military people, and just starts praying to God. And the guy goes, oh, you fear God. You know you can't do anything without God. You can go anywhere in this country you want to go. I'll make sure of it. And like, all because he did that. Like he prayed so publicly, you know, basically going, God, I need you right now. And but it's nuts, right? Like a lot of their teammates, if you want to call them that, get killed. And by the way, I did reach out to him to see if he'd be on the podcast. I'm like, dude, hey, will you be on the podcast? I haven't heard back. So I'd love to get this guy on the podcast. Because he is very hardcore Christian. Hardcore Christian. Like he is, you know, Jesus is the only way. But they also, like, they set up these little units, these medical units, and they'll let anybody in there. Like, if you want to help people, they don't care what religion you are, ethnicity you are, whatever, they'll let you in. And I was looking at that going, oh, I could see a lot of Christians getting bent out of shape on that. Oh, what do you mean you're letting in the Buddhists, right? Like, Burma is like something like 80% Buddhist. It's like, oh, why are you letting the Buddhists in? You know, and all I'm thinking about is like you and your philosophy on the music team. And we talked about this probably 400 episodes ago. We were like, look, I'll let anyone be on our music team. Like, you want to play in the band for doing music on Sunday? No problem. And most churches is like, no, you got to be saved. And you're like, look, they will get saved. That was always your philosophy.
Never seen it. Saved. Every church I planted, we let non-believers on that worship team and they always get saved.
And they get saved. Yeah. And because I even remember we had this conversation with Vinny, and Vinny was so against like someone being on the worship team who wasn't saved. And I'm like, yeah, that's the typical thing. But
when you're on mission and you're really surrounded by so many unsaved people, and that's making up such a big part of your congregation, like it was in Refuge Long Beach, what's the difference? You know, like the majority of non-believers are out there and we need someone to play guitar. We're not asking you to lead, like to lead worship. You have like the leader of the worship team has to be Christian. But yeah, I mean.
No, I totally get it. And see, for me, I'm like, and that's what I look at when I see most people that are bent out of shape on all these different things. I'm like, you're not on the front lines of gospel expansion. You don't get it yet. You're handling it from your cozy little church there in, you know, Plano, Texas, with 800 people in it, all of whom profess to be Christian. Like you don't understand what it's like on the front lines. Like that's my personal philosophy when I see that stuff. But so I mean I'd love to hear how he navigates that, because he's obviously hardcore Christian. He took his wife, by the way, with him. They've had their kids there. They raised their kids with him. They didn't send them off to boarding schools. So, I mean, their kids have seen all this stuff. Their kids were there with them in Iraq. And, like, they were in some of the just, like, the documentary, like, all the video that you see, you're like, oh, my gosh. And, like, there's this one time when there's, like, at least one little kid, and there might have been more, that were over on this wall. The Iraqis had lined up a whole bunch of civilians, or not the Iraqis, the ISIS had lined up a whole bunch of the Iraqi civilians and shot them all. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, up against the wall, they're dead. And there's this one little girl that's like sitting right next to her mom. Like that's her mom. Her mom is now dead. And they're like, we can't get her. The only reason why she's not dead is the angle that she's at. The snipers can't hit her. And like, they're like, we have to go get her. How do we do it? And they're like, I mean, they're just constantly praying. How do we do this? How do we do this, Lord? And they finally, you know, get over, like, because they get behind one of their tanks. I mean, the tanks are getting just shot to crap, right? Like, you think a tank's all, you know, oh, that's awesome. And nothing's going to happen. No, dude. I mean, you got that many guns shooting on it, you're going to start doing some damage to different parts of vehicles, Humvees, tanks, all that stuff. And they're finally able to get this girl by the grace of God and get her saved. And you know, another scene, and by the way, one of the guys gets shot, right? Another guy gets killed while they're rescuing all these that are all part of his team. One of the guys from Burmese, like a bunch of the guys from Burmese natives are like, we're going to go help.
His right-hand guy in the movie gets killed before the production. He put that note on there. I remember that.
At the very end.
I remember being like shocked, like, wow, that guy the whole time. And he ends up.
He was the guy who shot most of the movie. He filmed most of the movie, like all the scenes. It was his video camera that did it.
Yeah.
And like there was another scene where they're like, look, ISIS is everywhere and they're trying to kill everybody. And he's like, we got to get from here to there. And like they walk into this room in this building that's been just blown up. And it's like 3 feet high of cans, like soda cans. And they're like, we have to walk. Everyone's going to know exactly where we are. We're walking on these cans. And they're just like, God, we have to get over there. Don't let ISIS hear us.
Yeah.
And it's just
and
like,
they get ambushed, right? I mean, they get ambushed anyways. And I think that's a scene. Well, not that right then.
One of the families had gotten ambushed. And that was when he went from, okay, we have to kill ISIS.
Yeah.
Like, if you remember that scene, like he meets this family, the family is so happy.
He wasn't happy about it, but he also was like, I did what I had to do. But like, he wasn't like,
no,
it was interesting to watch him.
Here's what happened to him with that. So he meets this family, they save this family, right? And the family is just so ecstatic, you know, thank goodness for you and all this. And like, they start to walk away. And apparently when ISIS retreated, they put all these landmines down. So as they walk away from this family that's just been saved and they're so ecstatic. And like one of the little kids and the father get blown up by a landmine, like literally a couple minutes later. And he's like, we got to kill ISIS. And he tells that to his right-hand guy. And his right-hand guy's like, okay, you know, if that's what we got to do, that's what we got to do. And he was so troubled by that. Like that night he goes home and he's like, he does one of those. He takes out his Kindle, opens the Bible app and just puts his finger down. And, you know, of course, the verse he lands on is vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. You know? And he's like, oh, and it like hits him. He's like, okay, I have to show love. That's what I want.
Yeah, it was so good,
guys. But this is what God has called me to do. And so, you know, they basically just repent. Okay, we're, you know, they will fire back. Like, they will absolutely fire back. You're trying to hurt somebody, they will defend you. But their goal is not to fight the other guy. Their goal is to save that person. And he goes, every time they save someone, he prays to Jesus. And he goes, and I can notice a lot of times they wince when I say the name Jesus. And they're like, oh, he's one of them. And he's like, my goal is that when life hits them again in the future, they remember Jesus is the one who saved them. And I'm like, oh, dude, that's powerful. He's just like, look, I realize, you know, you're Muslim. I'm Christian. I'm following Jesus, but I'm going to let you, you're going to hear that Jesus is the one who saved you. And maybe it's not today. Maybe it's later that you turn your life to Christ. And he's just,
yeah,
that's what they're doing, man. It's
yeah, nuts. It's good. If you guys get a chance, watch it. I saw it. And then at that time, I was with Nate Wells, who was planting in Oceanside. And Andrew and I were just over there for a few years helping them out. And he took the entire church to it. And Nate is not like a gun dude. He's not it, but he was so rocked by that film. They made the other one. I can't remember what it was, but we talked about it on an episode where they adopt that one church, fostered all those kids. That was the second movie made by this company that's been making these documentaries. That movie, again, I'll find out the name of it, made by the same people. They keep showing these scenes of people doing incredible things all over the world. But you know, since this is this and that, Pete,
yeah,
this and that episode. While we were on, I got a text from one of the leaders at the church that we're planting, and he sent a picture of a funeral that's going to be going on in San Diego here. And the family's real poor and actually canceled the funeral and then posted again and said, actually, we are going to do it, but we do need help financially. This is a family. They lost their son tragically. And one of our families is connected. So they asked this other leader, not Peyton, but they asked this other leader, hey, would you consider, you know, like, does a church want to do stuff? Because we're saying we want to keep going on mission, and we keep asking the church, bring some mission to us. What do you see out there? And so it's going to be a yes. Well, we're not going to say that and then be like, no, we're not going to do anything. So I just want to kind of share with you guys just real life how you would do this. Like, when you're in a church planting situation, you got a lot of non-believers or you got newer Christians or whatever, and you're trying to figure out, how do I get people to give? This is an amazing opportunity. So when you start going on a mission in the community, that becomes a real incentive for you to start asking people to donate and to give. So case in point, when this other leader came, I just said, hey, I think we should take an offering for it. And just because we don't have at this church plant right now, because half of our people, like, we baptized 10 people this year, like, so many of them are new believers. What I've been saying is, look, we're going to tackle the giving issue. None of us take a paycheck from it. We're not yet in a building, although we've been sitting on kind of like some savings. We've been contributing and building up money. Other people we've been partnering, they're pouring into us. So what we're doing now
is... Just don't ask Pete to be your treasurer. We learned that one the hard way.
Don't ask Pete to be your treasurer. But here's the thing. We're going to be using that opportunity now that someone's brought us another mission. And we just keep doing rad stuff. But, you know, we might go and serve. We don't know yet. But we might go serve at the funeral. We might help with something that they can't afford. We'll see. But we're going to take an offering for it. And the church will add, it'll kick some in. But this, to me, is the way, just a little pro tip for you guys that are, when you're like, man, people just aren't giving. I've talked about it. Do some mission. Right? Get people in the game, let them have some skin in the game, and then take an offering and then go do something visibly to connect with that mission, whatever it was, and you will start seeing people start to give. When they can see the impact that their giving has in a community, they'll start giving. So I just want to give that, since it's a little this and that, that could have been a whole episode, but I just distilled it down for you.
I like it. I like it.
Thank you.
Little this and that.
So now we got a little Star Wars episode every once in a while. Now we got a little this and that.
There you go.
All right. It took us like, what, 12 years to figure that one out? I think we've been doing a lot of this and that unofficially.
I still can't believe you canceled last week's podcast because you're going to Comic-Con and then you don't go.
Oh, my friend, you would believe if you understood this book project. Oh, my gosh. I literally finished at 5 a.m. It was due on the guy's desk at 6 a.m. I pulled an all-nighter after working hard for 2 weeks, round the clock editing this thing. And Brooks had just enough time to go in there and fix some things and got it in by 6 a.m. So I was quite proud. I kept marveling, like, God, you're in this, because the Peyton, you know, that kind of like, you know, how it started and how it's going. It right. was one of those. How it started Monday morning, I'm in the prayer meeting going, oh, yeah, I got this. I should be done. I might even finish early for once. Be done by 3 p.m. early day clocking out. Nope. 5 a.m. the next morning was done because I got in there and I ripped the insides out of that chapter and started kicking and smashing stuff and beat it into submission. And now I think it's a decent chapter, but don't get me talking about my book. You know what happens then.
Yeah, you can't stop talking about it.
I can't stop. Cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
All right. Well, hey, on that cha-ching note, Pete, you know what else makes the sound cha-ching? When Simplify Church handles all your bookkeeping needs, you know, they sit over there on the other end of the line and they just go, oh, I help Pete. Cha-ching. Right. They're always so happy about it. And if you, as a church planner, are struggling under the burden of all your bookkeeping, head on over to simplifychurch.com. Tell them Peyton and Pete. Tell them Peyton sent you.
Peyton, are we now one person? Have we done that? Have we combined?
We finish each other's sentences now. All right. Hey, guys, thanks for joining us today. This has been Peyton and Pete, the Church Planner Podcast. Pete, sign us out.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you got to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.